Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
Disgusting display.
And it starts right now.
So, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing.
You know, I'm also starting to hate talking.
First joke of the day.
Oh, you beat me to it. I had a very confrontational first joke of the day today, and you just totally you pulled the rug out from under it.
Save it for next week.
Yeah, no, well, it was it. I'm fresh off of it right now. So I was going to say today that my shit smelled like puke.
Did it really?
Yeah. I don't know why.
Geez, I'm really sorry to throw a roadblock in the way of that.
Our listeners of that tidbit. I can't explain.
Should we start over? Let's
do it again.
Fresh and nail it.
I just wanted to carry over the glitz fresh. And glamour of the Oscars into this program by saying,
well, the year we did the Oscars, remember that the women's bathroom flooded and there was 3 inches of water in the hallway before. It was great. It was
wow.
Yeah. Was that 3 inches? I thought it was more like 6.5, 7.
Oh,
maybe that's just
a perception
thing. Was this the 10-year anniversary of that, by the way?
11? We did it in 2013, maybe?
Wow.
Did we? I couldn't remember if we did it in 13 or we did it about the 13 movies in 14.
Oh,
I
couldn't remember. But
I mean, I could look that up, but it's like my fingers can't care enough.
I know. That's so true. That would mean it's the 10-year anniversary of the 10-year anniversary of the movie Chicago. Oh,
2013.
That stupid Silver Linings Playbook we got saddled with. Has anyone ever mentioned that?
No.
Since that year.
And Bradley Cooper has just bedeviled us ever since. So we're going to talk about that probably.
Also, that movie, I know, who cares at this
stunk.
Point? The message of it was, if you have major psychological problems, just throw your medication away. You need to dance.
And enter contests with professionals.
Yeah, and just jog in a garbage bag and you'll be fine. That's all I remember from that movie is he was jogging in a garbage bag.
I hate when people do that.
I know. It's like you
wear a garbage bag.
Humans. We're in the hot body of today's episode. We are going to be talking about the Oscars and our feelings and a particular.
We're getting the last word in, right?
Exactly, the very last word, which will be over a week, and we'll tackle a hot topic in the writing community right now, which we'll get to in the body of the episode. Mm-hmm. But Goldie, I know you had texted me last night that you had a feeling that you just can't shake in your life.
So my oldest kid is 12 and my youngest kid is 7. So I've had kids for a while now.
Yeah.
Almost a quarter of my life.
Wow. Ooh.
And last night, my wife, I somehow got tickets to see Madonna, which she wanted to do.
Whoa.
She was able to take her cousin. And I said, you know, don't worry, I got the kids. And then my wife left And I realize I've been having this feeling ever since I've been a parent that, like, when my wife leaves, I get very alarmed.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, I can't be left home alone with two kids. I don't know what to do with kids. I'm not supposed to be here. They're not safe. I don't know what to do with them. What are they like? I'm supposed to feed them?
We know they like different dinners.
I have no idea how to take care of children.
Different
and I'm
dinners.
Like more than halfway to my older kid being to college, and it's still like,
what do I do?
Dinner? Yeah, I guess I could. I've never once felt like, well, I can handle this.
Right.
I know what I'm doing here.
Yeah. After my 12 years of sharpening my skills, I am now an expert.
It just seems like someone should go step in and go like, he doesn't know. You can't leave them with him.
Oh. The best thing, and this has happened a couple of times to me by mistake, but the best thing that happens is hiring a babysitter and then you happen to be home as well, like through some scheduling error. So it's like, well, we already hired the sitter. It's like, okay, we'll have the sitter sit here. I'll be in the other room watching TV.
But all the kid wants to do is then be with you and show you stuff. And then,
right.
Yeah, it's...
Well, is the 12...
Also, babysitters are now... Like each hour is more expensive than a nice bottle of wine.
Totally.
It's like just to get an unqualified 16-year-old to your house to play board games with your kids or watch your kid on their iPad. It's now astronomically expensive. Like I used to babysit, believe it or not, and I would charge, I think, maybe $3 or $4 an hour.
What?
So, of course.
Oh,
people would leave their kids with me and go
hour.
Out and get wasted. This was, you know, Boston in the 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I would sit there and I still felt like I shouldn't be left home alone with kids, but at least I was getting money back then.
Totally. Under the table.
But yeah, it's so you just go like the babysitter is now more expensive than the dinner out.
Yeah.
It's because of COVID. I don't know. Everyone's just says COVID for anything now. Like if you need a reason, people just go, well, you know, since COVID. It's like
it's
since
so
COVID.
True.
Yeah.
Well, so everyone was sitting around with nothing to do. And now I have to pay a babysitter three times what I used to.
Oh, yes, because of
Sleepy
COVID.
Sleepy Joe.
Yeah, I don't know why. Well, like America's that. Teens, they just realize they have us over a barrel. They're like, what are you going to do? Stay in?
Oh,
it's a great time for barrel makers. Does your 12-year-old now at least has she reached the stage where she's just like, I want to be by myself. I'll be on my iPad in my room.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, we're getting close to maybe we can leave them together for a few hours.
Yeah.
But the problem is the times we've tried that, we've gotten a call that there was a fist fight and had to come home.
Oh.
Wow.
A fist fight.
Oh, wow.
Well, you need your mom around to just feed them batteries when they want it.
And, okay.
You know, just make sure they're okay. If anyone remembers that story. I had a slightly interesting thing I wanted you two to weigh in on because I feel like I'm a little bit at sea. So Levy, you know, is at the school up near where we are in Santa Barbara. Of course, it's like probably the most expensive school on planet Earth. So it's this private school, and I've noticed that private schools have this thing where when something happens at the school, when there is an incident, whether it's like a, you know, a fight or name calling or whatever
bullying
it is,
or something.
They have no idea how to deal with it because there's money changing hands. There's so much money changing hands that is the first consideration, not what happened. It's
wow.
Like, how do we sort of effectively brush this under the rug so that all of the parents continue to pay full freight? And it gets
even... like you guys are going to go to public school.
Well, we were all set to. We were all set to because we looked at this school and they told us, oh, there's no room in the second grade this year. But if she likes the school, maybe an opening will come. And so we said, OK. And there's a lovely public school like you could throw as Brody Stevens.
Not would say, good enough for you.
As Brody Stevens would say, you could throw what, Goldie?
Well, you could throw a wet Nerf.
Right. You could hit this public school from our house with a wet Nerf.
Wow.
It is so close. And it's right on the ocean. Like this public school, they look right out. They see dolphins every day. I'm like, this place is great. of course, at the last minute, the private school is like, "Ooh, guess what? We have an opening. We'll take your money."
Wow.
But now, so we've entered into that world of fundraising and celebrity parents.
Just, not to derail you here, but
yeah, yeah.
The fundraiser for the private school, when you get asked for that, is there a quicker no? when you say to yourself, like, here's an idea. You just charge those parents as much money as you need,
right,
and don't ask for any more money.
What happened
to that?
It's insane.
What it costs.
I know. And
I don't want to pay someone else's kid's private school under the guise of charity.
Oh, you hate being under guise. But it goes back to the Sopranos thing. Remember when Meadow was at Columbia and they were shaking Tony and Carmela down for 50 grand?
Yeah.
And Tony's like, "I'll give you five. That's it." And Carmela just kept being like, "To have her protected, Tony. This is your daughter and her education."
Yes.
And so there's sort of a version of that at our house where it's like they have come to shake us down. They're like, "We'd love for you and Tal to come in and meet with the, you know, people about our initiative." You know, they have.
Why?
And so that's words for, you know, "We're shaking you down.
Yes. Here's something. Don't renovate."
I know.
Keep the class the same as it was.
Oh, God.
Classroom.
It's all happening. But so anyway, the little event that happened at school involved Levy. And apparently there was a class maybe after lunch or something. And the teacher was taking attendance and called out one of the classmates' names, you know, like Bueller, like no answer a few times. Yeah. And the teacher said, "Does anyone know where she is?" And Levy instantly said, "She's dead." And so,
oh my God.
So this prompted a phone call from, you know, the teacher to Tall. And then Tall.
She's not dead, right?
No.
Okay. Good.
Of course not.
Checking.
So then Tall coming to me like, "What do we do? And we have to do that." And of course, I am cursed with this comedy writer thing where I just thought it was funny. Like, I'm like,
yeah,
I think that's just, it's absurd. It's fast. It's funny. And so then I got in this situation where it's like, oh God, do I have to like be on the disciplinary team here? Like, what do I have to do? Wait till Levy's 18 to say, "Remember that joke you told in second grade? I always thought that was funny." But here's the thing. It's like, Tal is she's a fantastic parent. Like, she's a great parent. She has everything covered. She has moves thought of four steps ahead. She's doing so much. You know, I'm down here in LA during the week working, like, and it's like I'm in college. You know, I'm ordering food. I'm sleeping whenever I want to. And she's up there on the front line dealing with all the shit. Yeah. So I feel like I definitely owe it to Tal to be on her team. But the question is, can I be like a silent member of that team in that moment? Like, what do we do in that moment? Like, should there have been a phone call from the school?
Like,
I feel like had you given them the 15 grand, there wouldn't have been. They would have said, like, "We can't call them now."
You see, that's right, though. You're 100% right about that, which is what's wrong. But now maybe I'll give the money. This was like, so we can avoid those phone calls.
I mean, what is the move here? Like, what are you going to say? No jokes during attendance? Is the issue that she implied someone was dead and that's.
Yes.
And it's
offensive.
Yeah.
Wait, how old
why is
she?
That offensive?
How old is she?
She's 8.
So
why
kids,
is it offensive?
Well, I don't know if it's offensive, but it probably scares kids. It makes them think about death or like, why is she dead? Am I going to die?
Right.
It's like they just are protecting, overprotecting.
It just
here's the thing, and I don't live up there.
Yeah.
I mean, my reaction is go run your little fucking school.
Yes, I need you up there.
Just don't call me with this stuff.
I couldn't agree
when there's
more.
A real problem, someone's hurt, injured, there's a fight, I'll be there.
Yes,
that's a very good
or
take.
I'll start calling you with every little problem I have
with the school.
We have that relationship. Sure.
God,
this is good advice.
Yeah, this is good advice.
I mean, but can't you just tell Levy the truth, where it's like, Levy, sorry.
Yeah. Who the fuck is Levy?
Well, Levy is Modest's son, and he was a deep part of our life. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Can't you tell her that you thought the joke was funny, but here are the reasons why the school is overreacting?
No. Well, who are you talking about? Me telling Levy or Tall?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I could not say that to Levy.
That's a good point.
With Tall around.
Oh.
And I wouldn't even without Tall around. But
I did tell Tall.
Yes, I thought this was funny. So I feel like I'm in a bind because like I just think that's funny and like I want her to be funny.
Right. Yeah. Oh, but I didn't understand. So Tall does not think it's funny. Which I also understand.
Yeah, I don't think that she thought it was particularly funny, and
who wouldn't call you about this public school?
I know.
They got their hands too full.
Not in our pay grade. Like we just let them fucking figure it out.
I never get calls.
Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was the event this week, but I'm happy to say like this did not lead to some kind of like big argument between me and Tall about it. I just told her like I'm in a bind. I think it's funny, but I want to support you, and so then we ended up just kind of like I don't know, not dealing with it that much.
Right, but that's good communication.
Yeah, we're getting better at that.
That's
great.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was the event this week.
Or you just over apologize and say.
Oh, I've done that. That doesn't work.
I am as deeply shocked as you were by my daughter's words. And for her to disrupt the sanctity of attendance, which is something that I hold so dear, because to know who's there and who's not there is so critical and really the foundation of the day and something that I have a reverence for, and I've taught that in my house. And so to hear this, particularly about this one ritual that has always just been so sacred to me, it's going to take me time to process.
I like nothing about this.
But I'm so glad to engage in it with you.
Oh, I hate your tone of voice.
And if we could have maybe a daily discussion about it, just to know she's making progress in this area, if after attendance you could call me and verify that what I'm doing at home is having an effect in the school.
I'm having a physical reaction.
Then I think one hand would really be washing the other.
God, stop.
That was very good.
Oh, that was too good.
They would probably get off the phone and not know if you're being serious or not.
No, they would.
Oh, I'm always serious.
Yeah, see, I hated all of that.
So good.
I had a visceral physical reaction to you talking right then.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Something else I have a visceral physical reaction to, Johnny Jokes.
Welcome, Hollywood. Here's Johnny.
Johnny Z.
A little under the weather.
Johnny Z. All right, yes. I've got a few this week. I have no idea which order or which ones to do. Here we go. George Santos, disgraced former congressperson George Santos, announced that he is running for Congress again. Pundits took the announcement as a clear sign that George Santos is not running for Congress again. Man is a liar. All right, here we go. Cole Brower became the first American woman to sail around the world solo. And Time Magazine has already named her 1588's Person of the Year.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Not a new thing sailing around the world. Here we go. From the world of sports, the Patriots have traded former first-round pick quarterback Mac Jones to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mac was supposed to fly down to Florida, but the trade was put in jeopardy after his boarding pass was intercepted.
Yeah.
Not a great quarterback.
That's a Johnny joke.
That is a Johnny right there. And here's definitely a Johnny. The Boeing whistleblower has been found dead under mysterious circumstances in South Carolina. Well, I think we can rule out my wife. She hasn't whistleblown my Boeing in years.
Oh, God.
Johnny Carson, everyone. All right, and one more. Oh, no, I don't want to do that one. Let's end on that one. Boeing in years. Johnny, too.
Okay. Well done. See if I can get through these. Fitness manufacturer Bowflex has filed for bankruptcy. A judge ordered Bowflex has to pay the bank $150 million or just six installments of $19.95 million if they act now.
Yes. Very Johnny.
Media scion Rupert Murdoch is engaged again, this time to 67-year-old retired biologist Elena Zhukova.
Okay.
The bride says the wedding will take place as soon as she's sure he's actually going to die. New York City's Metropolitan Opera has issued a trigger warning before performances due to, quote, cultural insensitivities. Apparently, the opera is so offensive, it almost isn't boring. Well, conspiracy theorists are having a field day after Princess Kate Middleton had a health crisis, vanished from the public eye, then resurfaced in a doctored photo. Buckingham Palace insists Kate is totally fine, and she will soon be well enough to stand there and wave slightly.
Very Goldie. Very Goldie. And
finally, this is hot off the presses.
Ooh.
Special counsel Robert Hur testified before Congress that President Biden couldn't remember when his son died, the dates he was vice president, or what a fax machine is. Biden fired back, his mind is as sharp as one of those pointy things you stick in this stuff. Just ask Jill. Jill. Jill.
That was performance art. That last one was performance art. Good batch, Goldie. Good batch.
Thanks.
Oh, those are torture and fun.
Sorry, the congestion, this cold. It was given to me by my daughter 2 weeks ago, and I've now given it back to her.
Oh, you have a giving family. Yeah, I told you, the cold I had this season lasted over a month. It was Thanksgiving to New Year's.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long
it's
one.
It's not fun.
Long cold vid.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day.
So what makes a life a good one?
In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, so before we get going, we're going to talk about the Oscars and one particular issue that's been grabbing the writer headlines recently. But we wanted to shout out a few of our loyal listeners who send us great emails all the time.
Yeah.
So, JC, shout out a few of these names so we can give them a little love.
Yes. Jason Rutkowski.
Yes.
Yes.
Someone
my wife's cousin's husband, a great guy.
That's awesome.
Oh, really? That's the connection there. Yeah, he's cool. A great, great listener. He writes great. Jason, your emails are awesome. We love reading them. So please keep sending them. And we will continue to read them aloud. Not today, but we will do that.
Jim Mahoney. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, Jim writes good ones too. I don't know Is Jim Mahoney like connected to my world a little bit? I feel like he might be.
I don't know. Let us know, Jim. I don't think so.
I don't know either. He sounds like someone who asks for money from my high school, but I don't think that's him.
Lauren Sivan.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
We love.
Great friend. Great yes. friend. Yeah. We met her, right?
Yes.
When we went
Tootsie.
To that terrible, Tootsie show.
The musical.
And, she was out with her friend.
Dan Knapp.
Dan
yeah. Knapp.
Yes.
Take a nap. He came bearing gifts for me. He brought me a bunch of pot.
Yeah, he was super
that was
sweet.
Awesome.
Pot.
He knows me well.
Yes. And Spencer Crandall.
Spence, buddy, are you listening? Spencer Crandall, we went to high school together. He was a year ahead of me, so he was in John Viner's class, who was not asked to be a part of this podcast. But Spencer was always so nice. And like, you know, especially in prep school, there are deadheads, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are just kids who already at age 15 are like way into the dead. And he was one of them. But it was interesting because there were like three very serious deadheads in the school.
Sounds like Levy's into the dead.
Nice. She's dead. But so Spencer was a deadhead, but he was also like the deadhead where you'd pass the other deadheads, like they'd be playing hacky sack or something, or very into like doing some deadheady type dance. And Spencer was always the one that as you walked by, you would catch eyes with him and he'd give you a little look like, I know this is kind of stupid.
No you know, way.
He was sort of in on the joke was my thing. He always had this sort of mischievous look on his face like, yeah, I get it. I'm kind of with these deadheads now, but it's a little weird. I get it.
It's not permanent.
And one of the other
when was the last time you saw anyone playing hacky sack?
Been a while, by gar.
Yeah.
Really long.
I used to really want to be good at that.
Me too. And I never was.
No,
I
was
awful. And I had a hacky sack and I remember almost treating it like a baseball mitt, like I was trying to soften it and like, you know, I would try and meld it a little in my hands.
We used to play that a lot. Like when we were on tour, we would get out of the van and then, let's get the hacky sack. And then my favorite move, there were two ones. One's called the pirate, where, you know, it goes around everybody and then you catch it between your shoulder and your chin.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go, arr. It was so funny. I was like, do the pirate.
What a terrible time. Yeah, we had, instead of, we had hacky sacks. But a big thing when we were in high school was the Aerobie. You remember Aerobie? The fucking best Frisbee.
The Frisbee you could throw the length of a football field.
Best Frisbee ever invented. It was the Frisbee that was just a ring. You know, it was just, it had a hole in the middle. It was like orange construction cone color.
Yes.
And kids would, you know, you could be walking exactly like you said, Goldie, a football field away and something from some unseen person would just hit you in the side of the head. Like you had no idea where it was coming from. It was so far away. That was very fun. Anyway, Spencer, we're so glad you listen. We love your emails. Please keep listening. And I hope
we love all the emails.
I hope you listen to like a Help Slip Frank tonight in our honor.
Didn't he give you a hard time? That's what are these last
I know.
Email.
A couple people did.
No,
yes, I misidentified. I said Help Slip Frank from 71 and everybody, all the deadheads got up in arms. They're like, it didn't come out till 76. Well, I don't know the order everything came out. As The Onion once famously wrote in their Our Dumb Century, which is one of the funniest books ever written, they had their headline from 1969 was just a picture of the Grateful Dead, and it says, Grateful Dead begin 30-year-long song. I've always felt that way about the dead. It's like, I don't know when any of it came out. It was just all one thing.
That's funny.
Anyway, our emailers are great. Thank you for emailing.
Thank you. We
read all of them, and we will read some aloud coming up soon. But now, let's talk about the Oscars. I happen to think this year was a good show. I thought there were a lot of good movies this year, which I don't always feel like. So it was entertaining for me. One of the highlights for sure, and I think we need to spotlight this, was our buddy John Mulaney.
God.
John Mulaney got to go up there and riff And hilariously, I was just shitting on Field of Dreams last week, and there he was on
stage. But I like he's one of the few comics who brings the audience up to his level of intelligence.
Yes.
I mean, you can count him on one hand. You know, most people are just patronizing and condescending and giving them what they think they would want. And he's just like, here's what I think's funny.
Yep.
And he just says it. You know,
and people come along for the ride.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, he was great. He was a highlight of the thing. I thought, you know, I felt like a Jewish parent a little bit, because when he came out, I said, oh, why didn't you cut your hair? John, it's for the Oscars. Just cut your hair.
No, it's good. It's like he's an artist. He's just growing his hair as an artiste.
Well, you mentioned the movies being good, but I have a point I just want to make.
Please.
So Oppenheimer was the big movie, obviously. I still haven't seen it.
Same. I bought it, but I
no one has 3 hours.
I know.
No one with anything going on can find 3 straight hours ever. So for you to say you should watch this thing, how long is it? 3 hours. It's an unrealistic imposition on the audience.
Yeah.
And it's, if you have a kid,
forget about it.
If you have a job, how the fuck are you supposed to find 3 uninterrupted hours, which is really 4 hours, because you got to get there and back, and maybe you got to eat. It's really 5 hours.
Oh boy.
Like, you're basically saying, you know how long it takes to go on a hike to the top of Mount Washington, where you're packing a backpack and you've got like emergency stuff? Well, you need to enter into a theater for that long, my movie. So like, dude, and then to give it an award and to go, it's great. It's like, I might see it in a decade.
Right.
I could see it over the course of 4 nights, but like, no one can see this unless they have nothing going on.
Yeah.
So the whole thing should be prefaced by saying, like, just so you know, these are awards for things that were only watched by people who have nothing in their lives. And so they're also voted on by people who have even less than that going on, because they have time to watch all the things that if you have anything in your life, you could maybe watch one a year. Yep. You have to pick one. For me, it was Barbie, because my kids wanted to go.
Right.
So
that stunk.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about that. Because I feel like I should take a victory lap on that.
Why? Because it stunk.
Well, because I think the particular reason I highlighted that it did not work, which was the vaunted America Ferrara speech. And what I'm doing here is I'm doing what our good friend Michael Lombardi does.
Yeah. Help.
I'm telling a hard truth.
Yes.
Oh.
Whereas if you're in the NFL and he breaks down why what you're doing isn't working, and he'll tell you, and it's not a popular opinion. But I will say that monologue, which was written to be the big star monologue.
Yep.
She did not deliver on it to the extent she needed to for the movie to take home awards. Now, you put someone else in that role and have them give that speech. You put Emma Stone, any one of a number of talented actresses. You put Zendaya. If it had been given to someone else, I maintain the Oscars would have looked a lot different, and Barbie would have even split with Oppenheimer. But the whole awards case for that movie rested on that speech being executed properly. And it wasn't like, oh, she totally botched it. It was terrible. But she also did not nail it.
Yes.
Right. In fact, I barely even know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I don't even remember the
end,
speech.
I was so checked out by that point. But yes, she did not bring me
Everyone was supposed to be crying, and they weren't.
Right.
Right.
That's except the hard truth.
I cry very easily, too.
Barbie was crying. Barbie cried twice.
Is there any?
Oh, right. And the second time we brought this up before, where it was like, it's supposed to be special when the doll cries, but we've already seen it. So presumably she's just crying all the time.
It also tracks.
Yeah.
Was it ironic that the song sort of that was nominated was I'm Just Ken or whatever?
Well, they had two songs that were nominated, and
the other one won. So I missed
But it's so funny because the performance you'll remember is just Ryan Gosling just killing it.
It was so good.
Totally.
It was so funny.
So we have a lot to talk about here, because if you've been listening to our podcast, I think it's on record how we felt about Maestro. And
which I haven't seen.
I hated it. Hated it. And one of the enjoyable Schadenfreude things of this Oscars was just watching Maestro lose category after category after, and Bradley Cooper knew it going in. Poor Bradley Cooper. He brought his mom as a shield. Like, oh, isn't this
sweet?
And
first, he absorbed one of the greatest awards show jokes I have ever heard.
Oh, yes. I missed it.
Agree. Agree.
What
tell
was it?
It, Goldie. Tell it.
Well, they basically said, you know, Bradley Cooper, you bring your mom to all these awards shows. You brought her to, you know, this awards show. You brought her to that awards show. You brought her to the Oscars. And you brought her as her, as your date to the Oscars. You always bring her as your date. And you brought her this, you brought her that. At a certain point, at what point are you not bringing your mom to award shows and you're just dating your mom?
Oh my God.
Which is an all-time great award show joke.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So he took that.
He took it. And also I noticed Bradley Cooper did not even throw on a tie. Like, that's how,
Boy, you're
much...
really cut your hair, throw on a tie.
I know.
You really turned into Chris Cooper in American Beauty.
What the hell is this? The gay pride parade? Yeah, no. So Bradley Cooper didn't throw on a tie because he knew he was not going to be up there on stage.
Oh,
God
yeah,
bless
that's...
him. And but a hilarious thing, and Goldie and I were texting about this, was they did not even win for best sound. Or, you know, like, or
the makeup.
Like,
once
makeup.
Oh, yeah,
I was going to say makeup.
Yeah, once the nose didn't win, it was like,
yeah, that's it.
Going to be a long night, my friend.
Nosedive. But so they didn't win for best sound. Goldie and I were noticing, like, not only did they not win for that, he had to endure Ryan Gosling just getting standing ovations for his musical performance. And like everyone else who did music, it was like they found gold. And poor Maestro got left. But a little side note about this. I just started watching, it's on Max. They have an American Masters, which is like the PBS documentary series about Leonard Bernstein. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch this. First of all, it's so much better than the movie. Like it's
sad.
So much more interesting. You like him and understand him so much more watching this PBS thing. Also, by the way, Bradley Cooper should have just used his real nose. Like, if you watch this Bernstein thing, his nose is not like the honker that they added on the Netflix movie. Like, his nose is totally fine and normal. It is not like this giant thing that Bradley Cooper was toting around for that whole movie. So that was a fun part of the evening, was watching that sort of crumble and fall apart. We had another little thing that we've been talking about on the podcast for a few weeks, was that a former Family Guy writer, David Hemmingson, was nominated for Best Original Screenplay for The Nobodies, as my dad would say, The Holdovers. And I really thought he was going to win. And he didn't win. And because we're honest on this podcast, I have to say that I was happy in that moment that he didn't win. Like, you know what? I wanted to try and dress it up like, oh, it's too bad. But it's honest. I was happy. But then
I just want to separate myself from you.
Yeah.
I never met him.
I know.
I love the movie.
Yeah, so. I loved the movie, too. Let me say that. He did a great job. And I loved
beautiful
the movie.
Did he, though? Because as you were saying,
but let me just interject before this. So who won for Best Original Screenplay? It was this French couple who wrote Anatomy of a Fall, which I haven't seen, but it looks great.
Yeah.
And they get up there to give their acceptance speech. They can barely speak English. So our guy from Family Guy, Dave Hemmingson, lost to two people who can barely speak English. And I thought that was kind of crazy, just sort of insane. But yes, so this is the topic we want to talk about. So there's some controversy around The Holdovers, where somebody came out of the woodwork, and Goldie, I don't know if you have the name. I don't remember. Simon Stevenson, who is a screenwriter himself, apparently wrote something called Frisco, that was a popular script being handed around town about 10 years ago. And Simon claims that The Holdovers was completely lifted from his screenplay, Frisco. And
the particular wording was The evidence the holdover screenplay has been plagiarized line by line from Frisco is genuinely overwhelming. Anybody who looks at even the briefest sample pretty much invariably uses the word brazen. So I read this.
Yeah, buckle up.
I got very excited.
Yeah.
Just like I did when it was like Jimmy Fallon staff unloads. And I'm like, oh, boy, rubbing my hands together. Here we go.
Yep.
Some nasty stuff. But then start talking about what then unfolded.
Oh, vis-a-vis this script.
Yeah.
So then this guy, he is trying to, you know, get the WGA involved. And I texted David even about this, David Goodman, our good friend. Mm. I was like, what are you going to do, David? And he was like, not my problem, not the WGA's problem. So like he was very much right away, like, you know, dismissive of it. But Simon attaches, or it's attached in this Variety article, the evidence, and I'm using air quotes.
Well, it's a legal brief
legal brief.
So it's not just like, you know,
a
Word document.
It's a legal brief that was 39 pages, so the word brief is already a lie. But so in the brief, I'm expecting, okay, scene one, scene two, look at this speech, look at that speech, look at this back and forth, look at these lines. But that's not what it was at all, Goldie, right? I mean, it was.
Well, here's the thing, is the preamble to the evidence was so well written.
Yes.
And so salacious. Starting out, the screenplay Frisco tells the story of a cynical and world-weary 50-something children's doctor and the precocious teenage patient he finds himself stuck looking after in a one-on-one situation for a period of days. The screenplay in the film The Holdovers tells the story of a cynical and world-weary 50-something teacher and the precocious 15-year-old pupil he finds himself stuck looking for in a one-on-one situation for a period of days. So what I am expecting is I will see, here's this scene in The Holdovers. Here's the scene in Frisco. And as, you know, Harvard University President Claudine Gay recently found out, like, I am expecting lifted text that appears in one, appearing verbatim in the other. But what the argument then metamorphoses into is the contention that Dave Hemmingson sat with a screenplay of Luca and sort of transposed each word.
Frisco.
Yes. He transposed each word from this other screenplay into something else. So, for example, if like one of the things says, and this scene takes place in a hallway. And then in Frisco, I have this scene and it takes place in between train cars, which essentially is a hallway. And it's kind of like, and what I realized is if you format anything, so it's like on one side, this happens, on one side, this other thing happens, on the other side, this happens. Like, it's just an incriminating format. And you can really do this with any movie.
Yes.
Like, for example, I was watching a movie with my kids the other night. And from what I know about it, it seems like Oppenheimer kind of is Minions. Like, you know, the nature of their work, is it villainous? Is it good? Right. You don't know. You know, they're trying to overthrow the queen. They've got this important ally, like Oppenheimer has these important allies. You know, they're working with destructive weaponry. Oppenheimer's working with destructive weaponry. Like, what they build, the uses of it are questionable.
Yep.
You know, and then like at the end when Kevin, I believe, is the minion who grows big, it's like, isn't that kind of the bomb exploding?
Yes.
Oh. And then this screenwriter also wrote Paddington 2, and it got me thinking like, well, Paddington is ripped whole from You, Me, and Dupree.
Yeah.
Like Paddington is like, he moved in. He's staying. Like You, Me, and Dupree has trouble in the bathroom. Yep. Paddington has trouble in the bathroom.
Yep.
Paddington makes friends all around the neighborhood. Dupree made friends all around the neighborhood. Paddington's overstayed his welcome. Dupree overstayed his welcome. And so you just kind of go, look, we've all as writers taken the same stupid Robert McKee course that everyone says you have to take. We've all read Save the Cat because the executives are all going to hold our feet to the fire over the Save the Cat moment. And you have to know what that is. And they're also going to babble endlessly about Joseph Campbell. So we've got to follow Joseph Campbell to the letter in the hero's journey. And so like, every movie's the same, guys, because they have to be, because they make us do it. And if what took place was you know, what our former podcast guest Blake Robin calls interpolation.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Where you say, well, these share elements, certainly, where you go, well, this is a school and this is a hospital. Like, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it reminds me of when we were doing stand-up, and I very seriously confronted this other comic, Leo Allen, who's a very funny guy. This was in 1996. I was so in my head that we both had bits about laundry that was similar that I pulled him aside and was like, look, Leo, we need to talk. Because you separating the laundry, me separating the laundry, like we're, and no one fucking cares.
Yeah.
And you're not that original.
Yep.
Right.
I had,
if someone stole your words, I agree. If if they use the exact wording and, you know,
well,
sure.
That's how it was proposed originally, that when I was first reading it, that it was like word for word. I know.
And it
expecting.
Was such a nothing burger. But Goldie, you bring up stand up in that era. And I had the same thing. And so at that time, we're both, you and I were both like 23 and just starting stand up. We knew nothing. And one of my early jokes was something to the effect of, oh, you know, I love Elton John. You know, I didn't realize he was such a big Who's the Boss fan. And, you know, and then I say, hold me closer, Tony Danza. And it was, you know, a clever little wordplay thing at the time.
Well,
very clever. The sharp, just rape your wit. The audience is dying. And so then, lo and behold, later that year or the next year, Phoebe on Friends did the exact same joke. You know, she sang that thing. And I was incensed and believing somehow somebody who had been at one of my shows had somehow, you know, it was the telephone game of it got out to Hollywood. And of course, now looking back on that, that's insane. Like, it's low-hanging fruit. It's a pun, wordplay, low-hanging fruit.
Right.
That obviously, like, of course two people can think of that. Of course, 2 million people could think of that.
Yes.
But yes, so this, the whole Holdovers Frisco thing, as excited as I was when you know, the article was forwarded to me to get into it, reading the quote unquote evidence was
there's
one. I'm looking at the chart of things that are similar in it.
Yeah.
It's like one side, on honeymoon excursion, next other side, won't drive 100 miles.
That's okay. Not similar.
Oh, exact same thing.
One side, mug of whiskey. Other side, insulated coffee cup.
What?
One side, school cook. Other side, farmer rep.
Farmer
like,
rep.
I'm beginning to think this person just has like one of those insane It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia charts on the wall with a red string and everything. And it's like, look, I think we've all felt this way. And I was telling you, you know, people always say, well, Family Guy is just The Simpsons. And I kind of get it, but it's so different. Like, you go, you could say Homer is fat. Peter Griffin is fat. Mm-hmm. Homer works in a nuclear plant. Peter works in a beer factory. Factories are often called plants. Like, you're not real. Like, shows, there's six things movies are about. Less.
Yep. Yeah. So it was nothing. I mean, let's not go to too far down the Simpsons Family Guy road, because that one might be a little longer.
But on one side of this thing, I mean, I'm just looking at this. On one side is the quote, they're going to get divorced. On the other side, the quote, drug does not work.
Whoa.
Are these even lining up properly? Or are you like one row off?
No.
Oh, God. Jesus. Yeah. So, Dave.
I'm sorry this person feels like, and by the way, they've also given the key to like, well, here's a good way to write a movie is you watch like Die Hard and you just change each location and each line and call it something else. Like, you kind of go,
boom.
I mean, that's they
did,
smart.
But they did that for a decade with Die Hard. You know, it was like, it was Die Hard on a bus, Die Hard on a boat, Die Hard, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. So I guess the overall point there is you made well, just movies are similar, and if you start putting things side by side, you know, you can take a great Western from the old days, like The Searchers with John Wayne, and put it up against Star Wars, and there are very similar visual moments, there are similar music moments, there are similar themes, you know, going all the way through, and it's just like, great movies, or movies that you remember, they have things about them that are very similar.
I mean, I'd be shocked if this case went anywhere. We'll see.
No, yeah. It's not going.
It's obviously this is all just our opinion.
Do you,
I don't know.
So wait,
like, maybe this is a really super convincing case. It doesn't appear to be to me.
Doesn't seem to be. No.
But also, he may have just wanted it to come out when it did, so the voting people wouldn't vote for it for best screenplay.
Well, that's interesting. I thought of that too, but I feel like the timing of it when it came out, I think the voting was already done.
Okay, January 12th. I don't know when the voting is, but it's probably.
Oh, January 12th is when that article came out.
Yeah. Well, no.
All this is done. I'm sorry, Jesse.
No. I was just going to say that's when the email was sent, but people talk. It's industry, right?
All this has done is convince me never to join the WGA's plagiarism committee.
Do they have one?
Well, isn't that who this thing was addressed to?
Well, that's so interesting that David would say, not WGA's job. It's like, well, you have a plagiarism committee.
No, maybe it isn't the plagiarism. It was sent to maybe 16 people on the board or something.
Oh, okay. Right. All right.
Not the plagiarism.
Probably the voters. Probably people voting for
We could get David on here to angrily shout at me about why it's not their job. And then I could bring
I don't think
residuals again. And I mean, yell at me again.
Look, scripts, you can register a script with the WGA. I've done this in the past because, you know, it used to be $10. I don't know what it is now, but you protect yourself against. I mean, if someone did just read your script and take the whole thing, which that type of stuff has happened.
Yeah.
And I've seen convincing arguments for it, but this to me doesn't feel like that. But who knows, man?
Right. All right, well, so let's wrap up with any other final thoughts about the Oscars. I was happy for Emma Stone. We had just watched that movie Poor Things, which was very interesting.
I really want to see that.
I just want to point out as a showrunner, as someone who's cast stuff, former showrunner, like I see through exactly Emma Stone's whole approach to this Oscars speech, where I've seen so many actors and actresses do this is they think a regular person would be so thrown in this situation that they make this public performance of like, oh my God, my dress and I'm up here and I don't know. And it's like, okay, you've had months knowing this was going to happen. You've had a team of professional fitters work on your wardrobe. So you electing to do this is a performance.
Oh, of course.
And your idea that a regular person in this situation would do this is so far afield of how a regular person would act. A regular person would go, this is important. I'm going to prepare and get up there and say the things. So I really did not like her whole reaction because I deeply suspect the whole thing was a very well choreographed, quote, impromptu shock.
Wardrobe malfunction. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting. There was something a little off-putting about her speech. First of all, the hug between her and her husband before she came up on stage, there was trouble. Something was going on there.
Really?
Because if you watch it again, it was almost like the body language and the length of it almost, I filled in the blanks of the husband whispering to her before she got, I'm really sorry about what happened in the limo. I'm so happy for you. You know, it just seemed like something was going on there. And to reinforce that, she got up there, gave her a little, my dress and, you know, the people and what a team and, oh, it's talented actors. And then she started to walk off and came back and she's like, oh, wait, I want to thank my family and my kids. And of course, my husband. It was like she almost Chad Lowe'd her husband in that moment when Hillary Swank famously forgot to thank her husband
divorced.
And then they got divorced. but that whole moment was fraught. But I will say I did like the movie. It was very interesting. It was in the sort of Saltburn world of like, holy shit. By the way, if you want to see Emma Stone tugging on a dead guy's dick, watch Poor Things.
Oh my God.
You will get that.
Spoiler
so that's
alert.
a little teaser for you out there. I enjoyed American Fiction. I thought Jeffrey Wright was such a good actor. It was filmed, Goldie, as we talked about, in Situate. Anything to say about that?
I don't.
No. Situate, Massachusetts. That could be your hold me closer, Tony Danza moment. All right, you're passing it up.
I don't want it.
Okay.
I don't want it.
He called somebody with abs in that movie the situation, which I thought was funny because it's Situate, Mass. So that was a good one. Totally worth watching. The Holdovers we've talked about, really good. Felt like an old fashioned good movie from like the 90s. It was yeah. just really, really good, really well written. I liked Oppenheimer.
I'm sure it's great. I agree. It was
one of those movies, though. I feel like Christopher Nolan has given so much to Hollywood in terms of box office and critical acclaim over the last decade plus, that it felt like, okay, this is the one we're rewarding you for. Here you go. And I felt like Robert Downey Jr. was sort of the same, because to me, if you watch Poor Things, Mark Ruffalo was so good. Like he was, to me, he was the best supporting actor of this year, but I knew it was going to Robert Downey Jr. as a reward for, thank you for giving us Iron Man. Well, right, getting off everything. Drugs. No, but it was like, you were Iron Man, and Marvel movies have made this town billions of dollars. Here is your Oscar.
How does he not have anti-glare lenses on his glasses? He got up and it's just like his eyes are totally obscured. And it's like, listen, man, you're successful. Pay the extra $30 when they go over the list of lens options. I know it feels like you're running up too big a bill. I know it seems outrageous when the lenses are $330, but you need the anti-glare for when you go up and you have a big acceptance speech, your glass, that you can see your eyes.
Yeah, I agree. It was,
otherwise,
you know,
it looks a little creepy
in the realm of my Mulaney get a haircut comment. Well, what did you think? Cause I liked it. What did you think about that sort of like all-star setup where they had like five former winners of the award?
I pictured them beforehand, and I want to know if there were instances where someone was like, look, could I introduce Paul Giamatti instead of...
I want to do him.
Nice
I want to do
things about him.
Yeah. Him and I thought of that, like Bradley Cooper got lucked out because he had Matthew McConaughey. And like you want to have somebody like that praising you. And I thought
here comes an insane guy telling you why this other guy is great. And it's like, okay, you're insane, but sure, I like you.
And I think it was the Oscars with the most hands over heart actor thing that you always see. Like, because when each one would praise the actor in the stage, they felt the need to show how much they appreciated it by putting their hands over their heart.
That's something I would do for sure.
I just want to point out that literally every movie they cut every 8 seconds. So when you go see Shakespeare, you're seeing a level of talent so far above and beyond what any of these people did, because all they were doing was acting for 8 to 12 seconds at a time.
Right.
It's like cut. And then it's like, here's all the food you need. Here's all the stuff you need. And it's like, okay, now we're moving the camera. Just kind of do the same 12 seconds. Okay. Cut.
Yep. Yeah. We're getting another angle.
So before we like fall all over ourselves with like how amazing and triumphant something is, let's remember it's just like they were acting for mostly under 10 seconds at a time.
That's a great point. And finally, to wrap it up, so this year was the 96th Oscars, so that means we're coming up on the 100th. Goldie, you have any ideas for what they should do for the 100th?
Yeah, just great opportunity to say, this has been great, let's just stop. 100 is a lot. 100's a real accomplishment.
Maybe we should have done that at 100 episodes of this show.
Well, 200.
On the horizon. Anyway,
well,
I thought
Billy
it was,
Crystal.
Yeah, go ahead, Chasey.
They should bring Billy Crystal back for the 100th. Well, if he's alive.
Well, I bet he will. He will come out on stage. I don't think he'll host.
Oh, okay.
I think Mulaney's in line to host.
Ooh, that
like
would be...
honestly, his 1 minute there, he would be a great host.
He'd be great. It's so funny, and I thought Kimmel was great. I thought it was an awesome ceremony. The jokes were awesome. The bits were awesome. It was so funny. But then, like thinking back, it was like the only bit I felt was a miss was the very opening.
Which I missed.
Right.
When they were on the bus, where it was like, oh, this just feels like you're going to do a take on this. And then they didn't do a take.
Yep.
It was just, he was kind of like, I haven't eaten in so long. It was like, that was probably the least good joke of the night, which I guess is fine. You set the starting bar, whatever. And I know opening's hard, but I would have just started and had him walk out. I didn't think that was worth it. And that was the only note I would have.
Right.
I thought everything was great.
That little Forrest Gump moment on the bus bench with Barbie, which I think...
Yeah, well, that's a Barbie moment because she took the bus.
Yeah.
I know we think it's Forrest Gump, but that's not what it was.
Yes. She was there waiting for the bus. And I believe that was just intercut with footage from the movie, right? Like she didn't go out and refilm anything there. Yeah. But yeah, Kimmel and your writers, great job. You had funny jokes and they were able to come up with funny jokes on the fly because they had, you know, they responded to the Trump
that was great
tweet.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome that in real time. And they had a few react. I have to highlight because of my brain, a couple of great puns. Well, there was one category where there were two people named Yorgos involved with the film, and Kimmel like got to some phrase. He said, "Yorgos is as good as mine," like which I thought was funny.
That's fair you.
And of course, there was the adapted screenplay pun where Kimmel said, "You know, how many years do you wait to tell your screenplay that it was adapted?" And I thought that was very funny as well.
That is funny.
Right up my alley.
Yeah, I had my arms crossed.
Yeah, I know you did. Folded,
shaking my head.
I can hear the noise you made. That was it. Those jokes. Like, you're like, I get enough of that in my life. Thank you very much. But yes, Kimmel, great job. Kimmel's writers, great job. It was a fun fun show, and you know it was a good one. You know, yeah. Some of them are good ones, some of them are bad ones. That was a good one.
Yeah,
well, we hope
it.
This was a good one. And we know now that it's time to get in to top five.
Top five.
Oh, beautiful. JC, this was your category today. Tell the folks what we're top fiving about.
Top five superstitions.
Ooh.
Yes. Okay, so I will go first. My number five, only because it was our last day in the office, it just happened to be Friday the 13th.
Yeah, overlap, instant overlap.
Oh, wow. Yes. My number four, beginner's luck.
Yeah.
I like beginner's luck. Number three is it comes from my childhood. I don't know if anyone else has heard of this, but when you go through a yellow light, you knock on the roof of your car twice.
Oh.
And say, padiddle.
Oh, I thought that was one headlight, padiddle. That's what we always did.
There's variations because I also remember one headlight is.
What is that from? I've never heard that.
It's just childhood. I don't even know where it's actually from. I just learned it from my friends in middle school. So but then you can make a wish after that when it happens. So anyway, number two, the rule of threes.
Yeah.
The superstition of everything happens in threes.
And that's right. Especially on this podcast.
Right. And then my number one, also from my childhood, if you see an eyelash on someone's face and you take it off and you say top or bottom, and then the person has to guess top or bottom. So you open your two fingers, and if it's on the top and you guess top, that person gets to make a wish.
I mean, Goldie would guess bottom every time.
Never bottom. Touch my face.
Totally. May I touch bottom. Your face?
Bottom. All right, Goldie, go ahead. What do you got?
If even my eyelashes start falling out, that's a big
deal. Oh, come on. You need those.
My top five superstitions. Number five, knocking on wood.
Yeah. That's yes. Jesus. That's a Jesus thing. You know that?
Is it?
Yeah, it comes from touching the cross.
Oh.
What? I thought it was like a Swedish thing. Okay, anyway.
Number four, I will not walk under a ladder.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
That's scary anyway.
Number three, keep me away from broken mirrors.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Scary.
Yeah. Number two, I do this, hold your breath when you pass a cemetery.
Yes, we have overlap again.
And just the number one overall superstition that I just love, curses.
Curses.
I put a curse on you.
Curses. That's a good list. And I wanted to try something during this. Let's see if this even works or if it just cuts out on Zoom.
Okay.
Okay.
Hold it up here.
Top five superstitions. Oh, it stopped playing. I can't play it and read my shit at the same time. Anyway, so yeah, that'll be in your mind. All right, top five superstitions for me. Number five, JC overlap Friday the 13th. And I learned that came about because Judas was the 13th member of the Last Supper.
Whoa.
And so the number, and I think it's hysterical that some buildings do not have a 13th floor because of fucking Judas. It's like, how insane is that? Like, it's crazy to me. So also, Friday the 13th.
Table for 13? Just a terrible.
I know, terrible number.
It's a weird ask.
Number four, wishing on a shooting star.
That's a good one.
And I read about this one as well. Apparently, this came from the first century. Ptolemy thought that the gods were, like, you know, bestowing greatness upon the people of Earth when a shooting star happened. And you can read all about that in Ptolemy's autobiography, I Told You So.
Oh, no.
Maybe the only reason I picked that one. Okay, number three. Goldie, as you said, holding your breath when you drive by a graveyard. I feel like that was much more of a New England thing. I don't know, Goldie, if you had the wrinkle that you couldn't exhale until you passed a white house with black shutters.
Whoa.
Because that was...
God, no, I would have died.
No, but think about New England. It's all white houses with black shutters. So anyway, number two is a black cat crossing your path. I do remember kind of taking that somewhat seriously and like stopping my car and waiting for another car to go by. And number one, I was shocked that we didn't get a Devo performance out of Goldie for this. Step on a crack and break your mama's back. Stepping on a crack and breaking your mama's back, just for the rhyme alone, is my number one. Okay, that was a fun thing to think about, JC. Thank you.
Cool.
Next week for top five, this was submitted by our loyal listener and great coworker, Chris Long. I thought it was a good one. Top five sports nicknames.
Woo!
Top five sports nicknames.
Thank
you, Chris. So that'll be next week. Thank you, Chris Long. And you know what? We conferred before the show, and this week we're going to end the show, as we sometimes do, on a high note. Oh, there's Tom and Max. And by the way, if you love Tom and Max as much as we do, Tom Gamble will allegedly be here next week to be very silly
crossed.
With us. So we can't wait for that. We love having him on. I'll do quickly easy high note for me this week. We got a new dog.
Oh,
we got a new dog.
How
named,
old is this dog?
This dog is a puppy.
Oh, wow.
This dog is a puppy, has puppy energy. So we are very excited to welcome Gus.
Oh, what kind of dog is Gus?
Gus is a mix of a border terrier and a pug. He's very cute. We love him already. He's soft stooling his way into our hearts. So we're very happy about Gus. That's my high note.
Cool.
So my high note is just, you know, however much rain we got, that LA now looks like Ireland.
I know,
yes.
It's so
it's
green.
Great.
Yeah.
I know it's short lived, but this has only happened two or three times in the 20 years I've lived here, where you just pass the hills and it's verdant.
Yes. Good word.
I'm very much enjoying our few weeks of this.
That's Love beautiful.
It. Love it. Very nice.
And then my high note this week is, our place in Palm Springs is being rented long term. So Stu went out there this past week, packed up everything. And we also had a pod that came from New York that we hadn't opened since 2019.
Wow.
He brought home all these old boxes for us to go through, and we found all of our wedding photos, just things we hadn't seen in many, many years. And
Excellent.
We had a beautiful weekend going through all these memories, and it was awesome. It was very special.
Aww, that's great. Very touching. Very touching.
So touching.
Well, those are great high notes, and that was a fun show today. We want to thank all of you for listening. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week.
No, they said podcasts are illegal.
Oh. Typical.
That's
illegal.
That's
that was fun. And it stops right now.
Go run your little fucking school.
I'm really sorry about what happened in the limo.